Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, jam-packed first half. Scott Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's son. You know that guy. He's going to be calling in, and we have John Holmberg and Frank Caliendo as well. Super funny guys. Funny show. So we'll get into that in a second. First, I'll tell you about True Niagen. I've been taking cellular health vitamin True Niagen for a few months now, and I feel great. And Dr. Drew has as well, and he feels great. We've talked about this before. You get older, your body's experiencing a near 50% decline in NAD, which negatively affects health, and it affects the health of your cells in your body. And when your cells are affected, well, then your whole body's affected, because that's what you're made of, man. Lifestyle stressors like intense exercise, lack of sleep, stress on the immune system, overeating, they all deplete NAD because cells expend more energy to function. That's where True Niagen comes in. Backed by Nobel Prize winning scientists, clinical research, global regulatory approvals, this stuff is the real deal. I took it about 2 hours ago before I came in here. Support cellular energy and defense. Visit TrueNiagen.com. That's TrueNiagen.com. Use the code Adam. Get $20 off any 3 month plus supply through June 30th.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Scott Eastwood. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, Frank Caliendo and John Holmberg drop by, and Dave Damashek's here for good sports. And now, in order to catch a jewel thief, Hack has to become a racist. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. A mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in and sharing the show. Good day, Gina Grad. And Bald Brian. Yeah, we're having a little problem with Gina's mic, I think. Brian? Oh, Brian's muted too. All right, we'll figure that one out.
Right?
We'll figure it out. I'll talk and they'll figure it out. All right. Scott Eastwood is going to be on the program today. He's got a really good movie out. Well, there's Gina.
Can you hear me now?
We could hear each other the whole time. We're like, we're here. We're talking.
We've been talking.
Well, you know, as a guy who likes to complain, I don't complain that much about this kind of stuff because I'm in Glendale and Gina's in North Hollywood and Brian's in Culver City and this shit didn't exist 10 minutes ago. Uh-huh. And it's a little bit of a miracle that we can all do this the way we're doing it. And I kind of feel that way about like air travel when a flight's delayed 20 minutes. I was like, ugh. It's like you get to go to New York in 6 hours. That's pretty good. If you would have given that someone a choice 100 years ago, they would have jumped on the 20 minutes. All right. So we have lots of stuff I want to share with you today and Scott's movie as well. Also, I'll tease it. I'm looking forward to it. But Frank Caliendo does a very good Sir Charles Barkley. And when we're looking for stuff to do with Frank, who does many great voices, obviously, the Charles Barkley flip-flop challenge where he smacks blowhard celebrities with a flip-flop to sort of so they can repent for their white hood. I thought the one we came on to on stage a week and a half ago when I was in Nashville. I think that'll be fun to play. Frank is not confirmed yet, but we'll see. See if we can get him to do it. Anyway, look, John Madden could hit you in the face with a flip-flop, but it just wouldn't be as funny. All right. The book, I just found out we were number 12 in total sales last week on Amazon, which is nice since they have 33 million books to choose from on Amazon. And also, considering it's said out of stock for the last goddamn week, it's not too shabby. But I'm hoping we can fix that. You can get the audiobook and get the Kindle, and also they will just ship you the book when they get it, and they have to get it any day now because it's been a goddamn week since I've been talking about where is that book and why can't Amazon get it.
But it hasn't stopped you from soaring to the top of the charts.
Yeah, I mean, pretty good. I guess a lot of that's based on the audiobook and Kindle and then other people reserving their hardback. But you got to wonder
find a way.
How many more people would have gotten in on it if they could have just clicked on it and got it.
But, yeah, Adam, in the top 20 charts, only four of them have a special Amazon tag of how they label them. For instance, one has most anticipated, highly quotable. Yours has been labeled conversation starter.
Ooh.
Of all the 20, so.
I'm like a nice bottle of rosé that you bring to a barbecue. All right. It's been a lot of noose talk these days.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Noose and more noose talk. We all have takes on it. I have my take on it. Now, my take's a little different, involves slightly different nooses. So I look at everything through sort of the lens of motivation. You know, I'm always kind of thinking about motivation and what motivates people. As a matter of fact, I was discussing it before I left the house. And here's a new sort of yardstick to measure your worth as a human being. Your yardstick, I'll dovetail this into the news thing, but anyone who's worked with any subcontractor or anyone who's come to their house or anyone's done any work on their house or has to deliver something or something, there's the paid in half versus paid in full. So when you order things, oftentimes, if it has to do with labor or work or we're going to install these new countertops or whatever it is, they go, pay us half, and then at some point, pay us in full. The difference between how most people act when they're half paid versus full paid, there's a wide chasm in how they act. And if you think about it, why is there such a wide chasm in the same person? Well, the same person wants to get paid in full. Once that same person gets paid in full, then they act differently than half. And what I was suggesting to young Peter in my kitchen today is your job in life is to not have two separate modes. There's most people do, if we're honest, it's always going to be a percentage thing. It's never going to be 100%. You treat the microwave at work differently than you treat the microwave in your home. Most people are that way. There's a small percentage of people that treat it exactly the same. They treat their car and a rental car exactly the same way. But most people have a little daylight between how they treat the microwave at work in the kitchen where Domagoj's making lentil-based meals at fucking 7:45 in the morning.
God,
drove me nuts at KLSX. So the point is
savory.
There's always going to be a little daylight in between the way you treat the rental car and the way you treat your own car or the microwave, whatever. But there shouldn't be a fucking gorge between those two. And there shouldn't be a gorge, you know, again, it's like, oh, yeah, I wipe my feet before I come into my own house. But when I go into the store or someone else's house, I never wipe my feet. Have one mode. It'll be more consistent. It'll be better. If you shut the light off in your bathroom when you walk out, then shut the light off in the bathroom when you walk out of somebody's house, is when you're using someone's bathroom, someone's house. So this same, I would say the same in the paid in full or half paid, which is I had some guys, they did a countertop. They basically screwed the pooch. They need to come back and fix it. And Peter's been trying to get these fuckers back to my house for 3 months because they're paid in full.
Oh, no.
When they were half paid, it's easy to get them to come back to your house.
A lesson taught many times on Contractor.
Right. So if you would like to have some personal dignity and go through life with your head held high, don't have a big chasm between paid in half paid in full. Mm-hmm. You either did the job correctly, you didn't do the job correctly, it either needs to be investigated, corrected, and fixed, or it doesn't. But either way, your actions shouldn't be driven by half paid or full paid. That's just a number. Yes, Brett.
You're 100% right. The example of the rental car is perfect because even, you know, I treat the rental car, yes, admittedly a little differently than I do my own car. The only difference between the rental car and the microwave is that the microwave is a shared space. Like you, if you're treating that like, you know, like some piece of crap, you're a sociopath. You know, think about the other people you work with. Whereas the rental car is yours for a week or whatever it is. That's a perfect example.
And judging by the condition of most workplace microwaves, there is a gap between how people treat their shit and how people treat your shit. So think about not having two modes with the microwave, and think about not having two modes when it comes to paid in full or half paid. Or if there is, see if you can shrink that gap. Now, everyone's talking about the Bubba Wallace and the whole noose thing. And my thing with the noose thing is I was curious immediately, like, why wasn't there pictures? Why wasn't he taking mm-hmm. pictures? And then I started to think, what I do is I always just go extreme example. What if there was an old timey Western rope, Clint Eastwood, Good, Bad, and the Ugly style noose that was just mm-hmm. hanging from the rafter in the middle of the garage,
swaying to and fro.
Would there be a picture of that? And I'm guessing there would be a picture of it. The reason a picture, that's right, Scott Eastwood coming in. I'm guessing the reason there wasn't a picture of it is because it had context as a rope pull. I have roll up garage doors, and I have those ropes and those things that hang down. Now, there's still a difference, I guess, between a loop and a noose, although noose has some action to it. It has a look. It also has action to it. You wouldn't use that noose action to try to pull. It would squeeze down on your fingers every time. But the loop you would use, and obviously that was there before they knew Bubba was going to use that garage. So
Yeah, apparently the loop had been there for however long, a year, year and a half. But Bubba was new to that stall. He had just moved into that stall where that had already been hanging there.
Right. So now you're getting to this gray area, which is maybe it was a noose, but it was a functional noose for pulling down a garage door. It had a context and it wasn't meant for him. And now there's a little bit of a disconnect. And I'm not going to give him, a full Jussie Smollett here, but this is him, I think, making more out of this than he probably should have, which is a very evil thing to do because it inflates, it creates what we're living. It creates more of what we're living in. Yes.
But when we talk about context, it kind of is nowhere near the Jussie Smollett thing, depending on if you're listening to Garagos or not. Because, the court of public opinion with him is he staged the whole thing. He did this. He wanted the attention. With Bubba, he had been very vocal about taking down these Confederate flags at the races. And people were very vocal. Some people, he may have felt a little paranoid and a little threatened by that. So he's now seeing things through a different lens because he's been very vocal and he might feel a little paranoid. It's not like he was just looking for trouble.
Not Jussie Smollett by any stretch of the imagination, for sure. It still has the same effect, which is we're already agitated enough about what horrible racists we are. We really don't need to squirt lighter fluid into this fire, this bonfire that's already raging. And the news outlets, of course, run wild with it as well.
I know the details are still trickling out, but was the loop or whatever, the rope, was it in totally where it was supposed to be, I assume, by the door for yanking?
Yeah.
Or had it been moved? Or had it been moved into a prominent place?
It was attached to the door hanging in the corner where you would pull it, where you would have context. If he simply said it was on the rope that was used to pull the door down. I've pulled these doors up and down a million times. If you work in shops, that's just where they are. If he'd given us some context, which he didn't, and the withholding of the context is the part that makes it seem like he was looking for this. Because if he would have said, It was a noose. It was made. It was fashioned from the rope that was attached to the rolling door that was used to pull the rolling door down. Then you would have gone, well, wait a minute. Was it a noose or was it a loop to pull the rolling door down? If he had given us any of that context, it would have. It wouldn't have killed this story. It just would have. It would have watered it down 50%. A lot of people would have went, huh?
And that's, but it's not done. There's a double down effect because the last line I have in the USA Today article is NASCAR still plans to investigate how and why the noose was left in the garage in the first place. But I feel like we've just established that.
Well,
the cliffhanger.
The gray area was, did somebody tie it to look like a noose versus a loop, a hand grab loop? Right. Like, you know, anyone who's traveled on a subway knows there's a loop that's above your head that you slide your hand into, but it doesn't look like a noose.
No, like a strap.
It's a strap to grab onto, but theoretically it could go around one's neck. Now we get to my favorite mayor of Oakland, Libby Schaaf, who has had a press conference because they found these, there weren't nooses, there were like workout equipment with some
ropes that had
PVC pipe going through them for grabs and hands and all that kind of stuff. Oh. We'll play you her. Now, here's what I'm saying, everyone. All right, well, let's just, a bunch of people walk by the park or participate in the park. Thousands of people, nobody said anything. Then one person said, these loops that are being used for exercise, that could be a noose. And then the guy who put the loops up, who's a black man who exercises at the park, said, no, they're not nooses. They're basically hand grabs and everyone uses them. And that's how we work out and we like them. So case closed. Well,
sure.
Let's hear what Mayor Libby Schaaf has to say of Oakland, which evidently has no problems because here she goes.
The Oakland Police Department has turned over the evidence to the FBI. We have to start with the assumption that these are hate crimes. We cannot take these actions lightly. These symbols are symbols of racial violence, and it's incumbent on all of us to have that sensitivity, to have that knowledge. And that is why I've directed our staff to remove any such symbol of hatred, regardless of the intention of what put it there.
All right.
The guy just told you he likes them. That's how they work out.
Gina, you're thinking like a man now. You have to think like a dingbat, which is, hey, we're moving ahead with the investigation. We have to assume this is a hate crime to move forward.
Don't you think the guy that put them up there would say this is an unbelievable, comical waste of the FBI's time? I'm telling you, I put the ropes there.
We have the guy. I think he's he's quite the character, but he's basically explaining he put them there. We're kind of done.
He likes to climb things. He climbed up that tree, put another rope here, put another swing there. The children are having a good time with it. But there's actually a family of father, mother, and little child, daughter. And he'll host her up on the gurney, swing her around. Out of the dozens and hundreds and thousands of people that have walked by, no one, you know, has thought that it looked anywhere close to a noose.
All right.
Okay.
But thanks for making that decision for us.
I'm just saying, look, are we fucking nuts? Do you want to find this shit everywhere? And then what about resources? Do you have unlimited resources? You're going to launch an investigation with the FBI because this is a hate crime until it's not proven. I don't know. How do you? The guy who hung the fucking PVC on the jump rope on the tree said he did it. How are you going to? What evidence are you going to find that's stronger than that, that it's not a hate crime? Oh, God. We are so
pretty much closed.
Well, and like this happens so often, you know, we talk about Jesse Smollett and stuff. It's like, now I'm angry because this is doing so much further damage to future real claims.
Oh, my God.
That everyone's going to go yawn when people are really getting hurt.
Yes. Okay, dingbat. Have fun running a fucking city. Do you want this brain running a city? Do you want someone who thinks like that running a city? That's the way she thinks. She has to make decisions about the reservoir or drainage or schools or infrastructure, roads or any. She's making that brain, that same brain is being used to make other decisions. That's fucking insane. That chick is fucking nuts. What? Why would you vote someone like that in? It's fucking sad. By the way, you're having a press conference. You don't realize what's coming out of your mouth, you dingbat? We're moving ahead with this investigation anyway. And then you sort of dovetail into it because these are, now you're getting into symbols of hate. Yes, there were symbols of hate. There are symbols of hate. Not this time. Mm-hmm. Not this one.
You can move on to something more important.
Oh, you know, hey, get Libby Schaff on the blower. You know those monkey bars that are in the park? Can't A, it's that. Got the word monkey in it. Gotta get rid of that. B, bars. I saw it's got bars, like as incarceration. Yeah, and then whenever I see footage of Al-Qaeda training, guess what they're training on?
Ooh.
Let's get rid of them.
That symbol of hate.
Yeah.
You know, 4th of July is coming up. Pinwheels often resemble the shape of swastikas.
Oh, good FYI. Call. All right, Libby. Let's get just on it. Let's tear down everything at all parks all the time and get the FBI in on this. Is Frank Caliendo and John Holmberg on the blower?
Bringing them in right now.
Going to see these guys. Hi, guys. Going to see these guys on our live show coming up in Tempe, July 3rd and July 4th. Or I'll see them on July 3rd. Sorry. We'll work that one out. And you guys tell me when you're on the Frank Caliendo cast is, by the way, the podcast that Frank does as well. You can get that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify as well. And John's radio show, Holmberg Morning Sickness, is weekdays. Morning, 5:30, 10 a.m. Remember those days? On 98 KUPD. Hi, Frank. Hi, John.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Is that Mike Tyson's punch out in the foreground?
Oh, yeah. There's everything. we do tons of impressions, so if we see something around the room, we just start doing it.
Connection's a little wobbly.
Yeah, guys, can you also, each of you, turn up your faders, please? Could use, like, at least 3 more dB of both of you.
I have to move to go do it. So, okay. Now or no?
That's a little better.
Louder.
We're just going to have to be louder.
There you go. That's great. Thank you.
All right.
Just do it like this the whole time. We're ready to go.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
This is exactly how we should be broadcast.
Yes, fantastic. Adam's second-guessing the entire thing. But we have fake Adam right next to me. Go, fake Adam.
Look, I think if you're just a little louder, Frank, the whole thing gets better the entire time. I don't want to get on your case.
With
about
guest Dennis Miller. I mean.
Look, Dennis.
I mean, what's going on here, Corolla? I mean, this thing's happening back. It's like we went to 1985 and found a flux capacitor and broke through time, man. I mean, what's going on
here? I mean, it's... You spent like $100,000 on a broadcast studio to whisper in the fucking mics.
Listen, we don't all have the change you got in your podcast. You know what I'm talking about, Corolla?
Sometimes you have to remind them that you're still one of them.
I've never heard your Dennis Miller before.
That high pitch one that he used to do on the O'Reilly Factory. He'd be like, Billy, I mean, what's happening here, Billy? I mean, it's crazy. Is that Frank Luntz in the corner? Because I think he's good. I need somebody to clean up the floor.
And John, I forgot you did me. That's it.
Well, that's something I'm glad you forgot. That's probably going to get me canceled.
You know what's good? If you're going to do me, get a little construction specific stuff in there. You know, a little 3/4 CDX, good one side ply, a little shear wall talk, a little glue lamb beam. Because cousin Sal would do an Adam Carolla every once in a while, but he'd always go 2x4, wood joint, but it's not specific enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I spent $3,300 on a glue lamb beam on an extension of my house. I didn't know I was going to have to do. And the guy shows up and he's like, we're going to have to glue lamb that. And I'm like, I know exactly what that is. Throws the price of $8,000 at
to glue lamb the glue lamb beam?
Glue lamb the glue lamb. I double glue lamb.
What's So you guys are going to be up with me on Friday. Is that right, Max Zapata?
Yeah.
And we'll always have fun up on stage over there at the Tempe Improv that's coming up. John, how's mornings? You've been doing morning radio for how long now?
20 years.
20 years.
20 years, and it shows. But, you know, yeah, it's and it never gets – I'm not a morning person. So I go to bed at, like, midnight because I can't help it and get up 4 o'clock. That alarm goes off, and it's just devastating. Every morning I wake up mad that I have to wake up. And you guys know, when you get up that never
– I know.
It's not a thing you get used to.
You know, it's such a weird thing. There are people that are morning people – and it's like, I got to be at my job at 9, but I get up at 5:15 every morning and I just like to read the paper or whatever. I hate that person, number one. Number two, I feel like that stuff is handed out by God when you're born. Like, you're a morning person. You're not a morning person. And if you're not a morning person and you do morning radio like I did for a number of years, you're fucked. And my feeling is the notion of not being a morning person when the world is kind of built on flights, early flights, jobs, up in the morning and all, it sort of makes your whole life torture. And this will be controversial, but as long as they're handing out the traits, I'd rather be handed the pedophile trait than the not, it may be controversial, than the not the morning guy trait.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Well, I was handed a choice.
Oh, you?
I chose mornings. Yeah.
Oh.
I had those options. At one point, I'm like, you know, there's a viability in each one, so I chose. You know what? I regret it, Adam. I think.
Yeah. 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 You made the wrong choice.
Sleep in a little bit and date some kids.
So you essentially fight your nature every single morning, and as we found out 20 years on, you never get used to it, right?
No, I wake up angry every morning, and 10 minutes later, I'm sitting there like, well, this is just what it is. And, you know, the paychecks come every couple of weeks and remind you that this is the only way to get this.
Mm-hmm.
And so 4 a.m. rolls around the next day and you're a little bit more angry that day. And then you just count down the days to when you want to quit.
So
Adam, was it Ralph Garman who said he's been tired for 10 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every morning's a trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. Every morning feels like a heart attack.
Yeah.
Every morning feels like you're sick. And you know, you looked at the clock and it's you're running 4 minutes late. You get into those moments where you're like in 3 and 4 minute intervals and it's brutal.
Right. Adam, I don't know if you had this. Does everyone else remember when they first got into morning radio? We're in morning radio. When you first got into it, there was that like, I don't know, 7 or 10 day excitement window where you're like, oh, cool. Like you wake up with a little bit of like jolt. You're like, yeah, I'm going to be on the morning show. And then day 11 through 1000 comes and it's miserable.
Yeah.
Yourself, you'll get used to it. My dad cursed me to this. My dad was in construction. His company was Hunt Corporation. They built state. And I would stay up all night and he'd come out and he'd just stare at me. Underwear, t-shirt tucked into the underwear.
All right.
Standing. He goes, have you been to bed? And I'm like, no. And then he'd go, this is not how the world works. The world gets up and they go to work. And I'm like, you know what? Not me, Dad. I'm going to find a job that works my schedule. And he goes, you'll see. And he cursed me that day going to work. 3:30 in the morning. My dad would get up and lift weights at 3:30.
Jesus, he's one of those guys I hate.
Yeah, yeah, same. I
hate him because I admire him. Obviously. Frank, we're talking. I was talking off the air. So when I was on stage in Nashville a couple of weeks ago, we were doing blah blah blog, and we're reading the blogs of all these white celebrities who are just sort of repenting for being white and standing with Black Lives Matter and all the blowhardiness. And I said, you know, instead of issuing a proclamation, because talk is cheap, how about a challenge like the ice water dump that they were doing a couple of years ago, like something that had a little sting to it, something where they could get an ounce of flesh out of them. Anyone could have their publicist put together a prepared statement and throw it out in the blogosphere. But how about, you know, you really repent for being white. And I thought, and then so what I came up with is the Charles Barkley flip-flop challenge. And we just film Charles Barkley smacking you across the face with his size 14 flip-flop, and that's your repentance. Again, talk is cheap. Let's really get into the challenge of this. And I thought you do a pretty good Charles Barkley, yes?
Yeah, I've been known to do it pretty well, Adam. But just, you talk about getting one of those flip-flops and just beat them across the head like a knucklehead?
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know, if, I don't know, Mark Ruffalo wants to issue a statement, and my feeling is I don't know, I could kind of treat it sort of like a beauty pageant, where I could say, you know, Mark, you there?
I'm here.
Yeah. So give us a short statement on where you stand with Black Lives Matter. And then, you know, a few beats into it, we, Sir Charles could just whack him with a flip-flop.
With a flip-flop, knucklehead.
Hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag BLM. We all stand together because when we stand apart, this movement falls apart and it's all for naught. So fight the power, Black Lives Matter, hashtag BLM.
Flip-flop to the head.
Thank you, Charles.
Let me help him out, Adam. It's sort of like America's Got Talent.
Wait a minute. Not me.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Buzzer.
I get it. I'm just trying to stay alive and not be the next to cancel.
Focus. It's Charles. It's Sir Charles is, let's see, Gina.
Mm.
Let's say Gwen Stefani. She might do this.
Sorry that I'm so white, I'll try to do better. I don't know why I'm having such a problem. Black Lives Matter, I want to be walking with you. I will go and demonstrate on Sunday. A likely story, but I promise that I'll be there on Sunday.
What the hell was that? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Flip-flop to the head, knucklehead.
Right. This is turning into a little more morning zoo than I'd anticipated. All right. I'm going to pull the plug on this bit. Do one more.
I got my Jim Carrey ready to go.
Okay. Come on. Do a Jim Carrey. Here we go.
Oh, righty
then. Hey there, little fella. Maybe I should help you out. How's it going there, big guy?
Oh, yeah.
Let's say, okay, just run with it now, freaky little fella. Okay.
Wow.
Now I should hit you with a flip-flop, because I can do that too if you're interested.
Yes, I'm just a little freaked out right now.
This whole thing going crazy. I do morning radio, and it's an insult.
Hashtag friend. Oh, we're coming over the sound effects. Not the way it's supposed to go. Ah! Oh!
I think what we're realizing is they didn't need us for this bit.
I think that's what... I think I've realized that in many different facets of my life.
Frank Caliendo cast. Flip-flop to the head.
We'll do it. We'll revisit it again on stage in Tempe, and we'll figure
perfect.
It out.
Perfect. What could go wrong?
Throw stuff.
Frank,
all the flip-flops flying right in summer in Arizona. We're going to get pounded by them.
Sit here and call it Chaz. That's not a Chaz. Chaz, knucklehead.
I don't know why you didn't choose me to be part of flip-flop Chaz.
Jack, don't come on. Look straight ahead with both eyes.
I wear 22. I don't understand. How come I'm not going to be too?
Double Shaq.
Now we're Double Shaq.
Double Shaq.
Shaqety Shaq.
Sorry, that's what we do with each other.
Does Shaq, how many endorsement deals does Shaq have?
We had him on our podcast, and he actually got a call during it to go do something for
Tony the Tiger.
For Tony the Tiger.
I can't be on here much longer. Tony the Tiger's on the phone.
That's really how the podcast ended.
And I thought he was going to become Tony the Tiger, like he's an LSU Tiger.
Great. Have you seen the commercial?
No.
He's done it already.
Oh, really?
He filmed it like a half hour after. I don't know.
Just start the cameras. I'll start promoting stuff. Go.
Aren't you hot?
The general's got a bad back. I ensure his back will be better with some icy hot.
He is... I don't know what he pulls down a year. I mean, he's got to make more than he was making when he was playing, right? Just from all these crazy endorsements.
I think he does a lot for charity, though. A lot of what he does just goes straight out to it. Because, like, if you've ever watched that Shaq show that he does, the reality show, he's just out there buying stuff for people all the time. And that's what he talks about. He's like, I just like to go out and buy people stuff.
I've seen clips of him, like, having dance competition ice cream parties with his kids. I mean, was that the greatest dad ever? Would that be, you know, everyone think about your dad. On the low end, it would be my dad. You'd get a guy sits on the sofa all day, doesn't like to eat, you know, doesn't want to go out to eat, doesn't like go-karts. You know what I mean? Is Shaq, could Shaq be the best dad ever? Like, if you were going to be born into a family, Shaq being your dad, would that financially, spiritually, emotionally, I mean, would that be the best? Just having a giant for a dad. You know, when you're five, it's the best, right?
Yeah, that would be high on the list to have that at a parent-teacher conference roll in when you're maybe getting a D or something, and then they're not there. Like, if it was Shaq that size, but he wasn't famous, that would still even be good. Mm. But if you didn't have the money or fame, if your dad's 7'4 and 330 pounds and he comes in to talk to the teacher, your D's turning into a C probably that day.
But who would be a better dad than Shaq?
The first one that came to mind was Mark Cuban. But no, the example you gave where he owns a fucking basketball team, is a billionaire. But when Shaq walks into the room, that's Trump's 10 Mark Cubans.
Well, like you said, it doesn't matter if he's famous or not. He's Shaq.
Exactly.
And how about the move I used to do with my kids when they were like three? I'd be in the shallow end of the pool and just launch them into the air, you know, and they'd go, and I'd spin them around, and they'd wear their little life vest, and they'd land in the water and pop up with this crazed look on their face. You know, how about just the actual swinging around? I mean, how about that move where they hold you up and you dunk the basketball? I mean, just the physical size of Shaq meets the wired like a fun 15-year-old in terms of their personality. Then you got all the cash rolling in. I mean, I can't.
And he's a deputy sheriff.
Yes.
That's right.
I think Barkley might be on that list, too, just because I think you'd get away with so much. Like, because Charles around Phoenix is known as a guy who, I mean, he was arrested. And on the police report, he told the cop, one of the five best blowjobs I ever had. So I'll speed a little bit. Try to catch that girl right there. Urkel was in the car with him.
I don't think he was in the car. I think they were at the bar together. I think it was like Michael Strahan.
Was that the same night?
Yeah. It was all, yeah. They're all just hanging out.
But it's in the police reports. Like, what are you doing? Oh, that girl over there is one of the five best blowjobs I ever had. So I was going a little quicker than I need to go. That was his excuse. The cop still wrote the ticket. At that point, you're just like, all right, you're good. That's,
yeah, it's, you honesty. Honesty is the best policy. I got bear claws and wine coolers in the trunk. Good. Bear claws, wine coolers, and a wonderful blowjob. It doesn't get any better than that.
Right, is she going to Michael Strahan or Urkel? I mean, this is a night of a lifetime. You know what? I just wish my kids was here because I'm a good dad.
And I would love to do the airplane thing, and I would love to play Space Shuttle.
Is his name Jamal?
Jaleel White. I mean, I don't know.
Jaleel White. That's what I wanted to say. Is it 275 degrees in the Phoenix area now or in Arizona? Or is it nuts? Is it
today? I think
it's what?
About 110 right now.
About 110. So I got that to look forward to. I don't have my spot here, Max Pat, as best I can tell. But let me give you guys a plug. When is Scott on the blower?
45, so about 6 minutes.
Okay. We're doing the live show. These guys will be up on stage with me. John, how's the weird lump in your head doing?
Excuse me?
Note come from?
Is that? He spent an hour making fun of me about the lump on my head, which, by
the
way,
while ago,
due to that particular event at Stand Up Live downtown, some doctor in the crowd that night said, because if you recall, I had this weird fatty tumor in my head that you made fun of and introduced me to, was it Weldon, the driver, what was his name, the guy with the bubble dome?
Oh, that was Dan Gurney.
Gurney. So you introduced me to the Gurney bubble, so it became the Gurney bubble. There was a doctor in the crowd that night. The insurance wouldn't cover the surgery. They said it was plastic surgery because I'm bald. So technically my face doesn't end to my ass. The hair is where you can stop having. So it was cosmetic. So the doctor said, I'll test it for cancer and we can take that out that night at your show. So no, he didn't take it out that night. But a couple weeks later, it was removed. Looked like a boneless chicken wing.
Wow. So he had this weird fatty tumor that just lived right kind of where the hairline would be, I guess.
I'm not familiar with where that would
be. They actually gave it to John.
Yeah.
And the tumor that they took out sounded like you, Adam.
Hey, put me back in there. This is kind of an I Dream a Genie moment right now where the solution seems easy, but everybody's complicating everything. Like, look, Major Nelson, just tell Bellows not to come in the fucking house. It's as simple as that. Don't answer the goddamn door. You've got a genie. I've been in situations where there's a girl in the house, and when somebody knocks, you don't answer it. But Tony Nelson, always with the door answering.
All right. Frank Caliendo and John Holmberg, and they have a podcast as well. The podcast is the Frank Caliendo Cast. That's the podcast. Wait, where's John's name on that?
Doesn't need to be there. We know who the star is.
Starring John Holmberg.
Plus starring John Holmberg. When it gets canceled, I can sneak out.
And the radio show, of course, mornings 5:30 to 10 on 98 KUPD. I'll see you guys up on stage coming up Friday, July 3rd on Tempe Improv. We'll carry on. Thanks, you guys, for hanging out. Scott Eastwood is going to be up next. We have a Sean Penn tweet to read to you guys as well. First,
does he have thoughts?
Yeah, he had thoughts. I'll tell you about J.B. Weld. J.B. Weld, it's not ordinary. Ordinary house glue's got the word ordinary in it. You don't want ordinary. You want J.B. Weld. These guys are good guys. They've been a good sponsor. I met these guys and hung out with them in Vegas and SEMA. So don't glue it. Weld it. J.B. Weld it. It's available at Home Depot and jbweld.com. All right. We have the Sean Penn. Sean, I just found out from Nate that Sean Penn sent a trailer. He sent a tweeted out a trailer for Uppity.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's kind of.
It says, thanks to Willie T. Ribbs and Bubba Wallace, ass-kicking leaders, Uppity, the Willie T. Ribbs story. Here's the trailer. Now, it's at YouTube, at Willie Ribbs, at Bubba Wallace. I'm not seeing an at Adam Carolla, but that's okay. We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So hopefully all this stuff will get a little more traction for Willie T. Ribbs. It's interesting. You think about the timing of everything. It's like, I'm your emotional support animal. It's kind of good timing with the no apologies and the all woke and the no joke and all that kind of stuff. We did Ford v. Ferrari, the doc a couple of years before that came out. Of course, the Shelby doc with Matt Damon playing Shelby and everything like that. Been some interesting timing. And then you kind of wonder, like, is it timing or maybe we're tuned in a little bit? That's because the plan is to be tuned in a little bit, not just good timing. Good timing's nice, but to kind of figure out which way the wind is blowing would be nice.
But that's not why you did it. You couldn't have. It took how long to put that doc together?
No, I completely agree. It took years to put that together, but it's a great story, and it's timely now since everyone's talking about Bubba Wallace and NASCAR, and there's a whole section in that doc about Willie going to NASCAR in the late 70s and kind of the sort of circus around that, and I think you'll find it timely and interesting. So it's on Netflix. You can watch it for free, and if you want the Blu-ray, you can go to chassy.com. That's our website, and we'll sign it, send it to you, or T-shirt or whatever. Scott Eastwood is up, and we'll talk to him about his new film right after this.
Just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
The evil bitch that is coronavirus may still be raging outside, but Corolla Drinks is hard at work with another month of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month includes a Beard Bro beard shaping tool to tame that unruly Corona facial hair, and a Chew face mask so you can silently protest how f***ing stupid all of this is. A 6-foot premium beer bong by beerbong.com, so you can slug back a few cold, endless rants when the world officially opens up again. And of course, a bottle of your choice. We know times are tough, but we at Corolla Drinks are here to remind you to take a breath, have a drink, and wait for all this shit to be over. Mahalo. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Ace. I was delivering mail on my route the other day, and I noticed the dog barking at me in somebody's front seat of their car. That's not uncommon. However, I did notice that the driver get out and deliver food to somebody that was waiting on their porch. So that person was delivering for Grubhub, and I just wanted your thoughts on somebody taking their giant pit bull in the front seat of their car, delivering for Grubhub.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Leave the dog at home. Scott Eastwood is our guest. The Outpost is the name of his new movie. It's in theaters and on demand coming up on July 3rd. And I watched it last night. I have it was very good, and I have very strong feelings about it. Orlando Bloom is in this thing as well. Good to see you, Scott.
Hey, good to be on. Thanks for having me.
You driving somewhere?
I'm on my way to Waco, Texas right now to go surf a man-made wave.
Wow. Jesus, you're living your life. Are you out in Austin? Do you live in Austin?
I do. I live in Austin and loving every second of it.
I had, we'll talk about the movie in a second. First off, I'm a fan, and I love all the Fast and Furious franchise movies, and so I loved you in Fate of the Furious. I also had a weird piece of serendipity, and I told somebody to take a picture of it and give it to me, which is Jimmy Kimmel.
Wow.
Yes, Jimmy, this is a picture, and maybe he'll pull back a little, or maybe you can tell what it is. But Jimmy Kimmel gave me a birthday present 3 weeks ago for my birthday. Whatever happened to Jimmy Kimmel? I don't know where that guy is. The point is he gave me a picture. Now, the picture was you can find it, Maxipata. The picture is, we don't have any context for the picture because it's so close, but it's a, I wish he'd sent you one that was back a little bit. But it's a framed picture of your dad, Clint Eastwood, and Paul Newman, both of them looking very how you normally see them, from like 1970 or something.
And, yeah, that's a good one, isn't it?
And he sent it to me because I have a bunch of Paul Newman race cars. So he just sent me this funny Paul Newman picture, but I thought it was funny, and I hung it up in my office. And then I don't know if you've seen this picture. Have you seen it?
I have. I've seen. This is a good one.
What?
I think you said it's circa 76 or so. Can't really tell.
And was your dad and Paul? Did they do some racing together?
I think my dad did a little, not nearly the kind of racing that that he did, though. You know, my dad, I think, was a little fair weathered about it.
He treated a little more like a hobby versus Paul sort of treating it like a job. I recall seeing, and Max Patty, you can look for this, and then we'll get to the movie. I recall seeing a Ferrari transport. They had a Ferrari, and on that transport was Newman's name, and Clint Eastwood's name was on there as well. And there was like a, I don't know, a James Brolin or something on there. So they had this weird little celebrity race team for like a Ferrari 308 or something that they raced for Budweiser for a while. But anyway, we'll look for that. Congratulations on the movie. It is a great war movie. Lots of action, and based on a true story. So why don't we talk about that for a second?
Sure. Yeah, no, it's you know, directed by Rod Laurie, who I thought did a really great job of tackling a subject that, you know, it's interesting because the story is about everyday people being put in an incredible situation, a situation that really should have never happened, to be honest. But it got somehow got lost in the war machine. And, you know, this really indefensible outpost they were stuck at. And, you know, because of that, there was just this incredible acts of heroism, you know? So it's just, you've seen the movie. It turned out better than I could have asked for. And I'm super proud of it.
Yeah. And it also does that thing that always works on me every single time, which is at the end of the movie, they do the credits and they show the picture of the real soldier next to the actor that played him and, you know, killed in action. And the actors look just like the real soldiers. I don't know how they... I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it was intentional, but I don't know how you pull that off. But they looked exactly like the fallen heroes. And it's always sad when you see the actual person there at the end. But I don't know why. It's always sort of satisfying at the end of any kind of true, any movie that was based on true events. I like seeing the actual people there. I won't. I think Scott's connection's a little choppy. Can you hear me, Scott? Oh, we'll see.
What Sorry, what was that?
I was just talking about showing all the pictures of the actual fallen soldiers at the end of the movie in the credits and next to the actors that played them and how kind of haunting that was.
Yeah, you know, I think that always gets you, you know, right? I mean, to really see the real faces and to put those, you know, faces to the story that you've just been told, it gets me every time. You know I was emotional watching the film, and I went out and made the film. And when I saw the final product, I was moved. I was really moved.
Brian, you got a question?
Yeah, Scott, did you reach out to the family or what kind of research did you do to play real life character, obviously different than playing a fictional character?
Sorry, say that one more time. You cut out the last part there.
Sorry about that. It's obviously different playing a real life character as opposed to a fictional character. What kind of research did you do? Reach out to the family, friends, stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, in this case, it was a little different because the character I play, Clint Romache, had another book that he had written, and he had a competing project at the time with Sony. So he didn't really want to be a part of our project, but he was gracious enough to speak with me on the phone, talk me through what happened, got to know him on the phone. And then I was, you know, it was nice because he had written another book and I was able to read that. And it's more of a firsthand account of what happened, whereas Jake Tapper's novel, the novel that this is based on, is I think more of an overall telling of the story of the Battle of Camp Desh. Hmm.
Gina?
Yeah, when we see movies like this, you know, we're often shocked about the actors' day-to-day lives during these filming process. You think, oh, cut back to your, you know, glamorous yurt. Everybody take a nice break and we'll see you tomorrow and you'll splash a little makeup on. But we've come to sort of be a savvier audience and realize that's generally not how this goes, especially when it's this kind of movie. Can you talk a little bit about what living that sort of life day-to-day was while filming?
Sure. Yeah. No, everyone, I was really lucky on this one. You know, not every time you work on a film, you really respect and like most of the people that you're working with. So in this case, you know, there's a lot of veterans used, a lot of people. There are people that were actually there that survived the battle and they were put in the movie. People like Daniel Rodriguez played himself. And so there were people that were there. And when that happens, you know, on top of the already, you know, I think, you know, lots of pressure to not have it be anything less than average. You kind of form a brotherhood and you want to honor these men. You want to honor their stories and their legacy. And so, you know, it was good. It definitely wasn't a posh deal. We were out in Bulgaria filming this and an abandoned, abandoned rock quarry of some sort. So, you know, and it was quite far away from where we were staying. So, you know, we're out there every day and long days, shoot and come back and, you know, rinse and repeat for about 2 months.
So did your dad just turn 90?
That story checks out.
Did you did you have a party? Is he in Carmel still?
Yeah, he's, you know, he's doing his thing. He's 90. I can't even, you know what? I can't even believe it, to be honest. I look at him. He acts like a 50-year-old. He acts like someone who's 50. I mean, I don't even believe it when he tells me that I'm like, no way, is this guy 90? He's a machine.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's good genes mixed with just a spirit, I guess, just a spirit. I mean, he's probably working on a project as we speak, right? I mean, doesn't he always have things lined up?
Yeah, yeah, he's got something else cooking already. He's, you know, he's an inspiration every day. I think back to the story he told me when he was, I think he was 12, and he told me that he had watched someone. This was in the middle of the Great Depression. It was 1942, right? So we were just maybe it just started World War II. And he remembers very vividly someone coming to his house, to my grandmother's house, and asking if they could work just for a sandwich. If they could do anything, they needed work. They're so desperate. And I think that desperation that he saw that day really lighted a fire for him to say, I'm never stopping, you know?
Brian, did you have a question?
I did. So speaking of famous dads and speaking of you mentioned the people you work with, a thing I noticed, and I maybe I'm the first to point it out to you, probably not. This movie, The Outpost, has not one but four offspring, scions of famous, very famous people. You, of course, Milo Gibson is in this movie, son of Mel Gibson, James Jagger, son of Mick Jagger, and Will Attenborough, grandson of Richard Attenborough. Did this ever come up on the set? You must have discussed this.
I don't know how much we did, maybe a little bit. I think Rod maybe brought it up. It's interesting though, you know, it's more common than you think in film. If you sort of kind of drill down into it when you're on set and you ask people where they're from, or, you know, you find that happens a lot. I think like any trade, right? If you're on a job site, on a construction job site, you might be talking to a plumber and you might find out that his dad was a plumber, or, you know, their dad was a carpenter. You know, I think it's more common than not, you know, and it was cool to see, you know, a bunch of sort of the new generation of young people kind of doing their thing, following in their parents' footsteps.
I used to have those discussions on construction sites, but they would always go, your dad was an alcoholic? My dad was an alcoholic. Hey, the drywaller's dad says his dad was an alcoholic. Oh, and a drywaller. But we'd always start with alcoholic first.
Alcoholic. Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I want to know where this endless wave is and how it works.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't know how it works. I just know that they use air to shoot this wave in a combination of sorts that then makes this wave, and you can surf it. It's like every surfer's dream that grew up drawing fake waves during class when you're supposed to be paying attention. I mean, we're living in my dream.
How big is the wave?
It's like 4 feet, maybe, like a 4 foot wave, 4 or 5 foot.
It's like the wave machine on our cruise, Adam.
Yeah,
it's just like it.
Well, they have big parks now where there's a lot of acreage. Like it's not a small contained area. I don't know if it's a bigger park or the small contained ones now.
Yeah, this one's a bigger park. It's no long. It's not a. It's not that big of a. I guess a wave pool. The pool actually isn't that big. You'd be surprised. You're like, that's where the wave comes from, but it's, I mean, the whole thing fascinates me, and I'm glad I'm living in an era where it's happening.
Do you, I was reading that you grew up in Carmel. Your dad was mayor of Carmel. Yep. for a while. I love Carmel and that whole area, 'cause I always go down there to Laguna Seca and do the car races every year, that neck of the woods. But then you went to Hawaii when you were 10. So you must have started surfing as a young person.
Yeah. Yeah. That probably was the impetus of surfing. My mom moved to Hawaii when I was about 8 years old and lived there for, 7 or 8 years. And then got in some trouble and went to go live with Pops.
Your dad sounds like a pretty good disciplinarian to live with. I don't mean good, but I just mean like he seemed like he'd be good at dealing with discipline. I don't know how that was growing up.
Yeah, I mean, if you mean good meaning like he'll punch you in the face if you do something wrong, then yeah.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. That defines it.
Isn't that what every young man needs?
Well, anyone who ever sees Any Which Way But Loose knows he's got a good right cross. Have you seen every one of his movies? Like, do you watch all that stuff? Have you seen it all?
I think I've seen just about every one. There's probably a few I would say that I haven't seen. Maybe Revenge from the Creature of the Black Lagoon, which I think he had a couple lines in or something. But pretty much I've seen every one, I think.
Did you didn't use Eastwood at the beginning of your career, right? Sort of like a Nick Cage kind of a situation where you didn't want that nepotism, well, perhaps, attached to your work?
Well, I didn't buy a dinosaur egg and I didn't hopefully do a string of bad movies. But so I hope I don't have the Nick Cage thing going. But yeah, I just, look, I was trying to figure it out. I was a young guy. I think I was trying to fly underneath the radar, trying to figure out if I could do it. And, I think it's somewhere in my head. I thought, well, if I have the name Eastwood, like it's going to, affect it. The reality is I don't really think it did, because you still got to go out there. And it's like anything, you have to go and like prove that you can do the job, because if you can't do the job, people are going to know, because you're not going to be very good. They're going to say he's not very good.
Yeah. If anything, they're probably expecting more.
I think it's a lot like sports in a certain sense. I mean, Dan Marino probably has a son, but it doesn't mean he gets to start on the Dolphins. At some point, you got to get out there and play. And there are the Ken Griffey Juniors. I mean, there are the folks that are gifted and they got whatever that is from their dad, but ultimately, it's a meritocracy. Like you're just not going to get out there if you can't do it. Did you?
You got to cut the mustard, right? You got to be able to do it.
Well, look, whether you're a director or a football coach, like ultimately, you have to have the best people out there, or your work is going to suffer, and then you're going to be judged based on that. So, how is Austin? How long you lived in Austin?
I've been coming here since I was in my late teens, early 20s. I came out here the first time. My buddy's sister went to college out here. She was a few years older than us, and so we decided it would be a good idea to get out there and see what the pretty girls in Austin look like. And I sort of never stopped coming. I kind of fell in love with it, just like the South, the people, and then sort of slowly started to get away. I actually haven't lived in LA for, 15 years or something like that. I just sort of decided if I was going to live in LA and do that, I'd just do something else.
We found the transport that I'd been thinking about that has your dad's name on it with is Gene Hackman's name on that thing as well? Am I making that up? Yeah, team manager Gene Hackman, drivers Clint Eastwood, James Brolin, and there's something about Paul Newman that was on this. There was some like race team that these guys had. Imagine you're at Brainerd or Lime Rock, and Gene Hackman and Clint Eastwood and James Brolin and Paul Newman. Oh, driver on the Ferrari, driver. It says Paul Newman. And all these guys just come rolling up into your campsite. Like, literally, there would just be campers parked all over the place. And they drove that Ferrari, that Magnum Ferrari car that was all buffed out, which is in race trim. So anyway, I wasn't nuts. Sorry. It's just something.
No, that would have been, that would have been pretty cool to see. I mean, that would have reminded me, that would have reminded me of, like, I think I was always fascinated with Carroll Shelby and hearing all those stories in the 60s of the garage they used to work at down in Venice Beach, and, you know, characters like George Lucas popping in and everyone wanting to be a part of that culture and a part of that, you know, that really, that innovation that he had. I think it would have been cool to be around that era and see those legends doing that.
You also have a clothing line that I'll give a plug to. It's called madeherebrand.com. That's how long's that been around and how's that going?
We've been at it for a few years now, and it's going well. You know, it's building brands are, you know, not something that happened overnight, but we're really passionate about it, my partner and I, about trying to bring back some localism and trying to bring back some, you know, like really support the manufacturing that goes on in this country. We saw that, you know, we were buying, everything was being, you know, bought, you know, outsourced, and that kind of bugged us because just, you know, we're doing it at a cost, right? Cheap isn't cheap. And, it's you know, I think this whole pandemic has shown, you know, us that we've got to start to shift back towards, making things here and supporting your neighbors, supporting your local, manufacturer in a variety of sectors.
Yeah, I agree. This thing where everything is just outsourced to China or Thailand or whatever label you see on the back of your shirt these days, and some of the places are, you know, Vietnam or whatever, like, obviously it's all in the name of saving money, but at some point, yeah, is it what's there's always nothing is ever really free. Like, there's always going to be a downside. And then we felt it. We didn't, you know, we had to, I don't know, buy masks from China or buy a bunch of, you know, we're out of ventilators or out of masks. Like, we're not doing the manufacturing we should be doing. And by the way, we create a lot of jobs for those people as well. So what's your deal? Where are you out of? Is it in Austin?
Well, we actually use a few different manufacturers. It depends on what product you're talking about. So our socks are out of North Carolina, and we've got a great factory down there. And it's, you know, we use them. We've been down to the factory. We visited them. We've worked extensively with them designing our sock line. We've got, you know, we've got some factories that you'd be surprised. Some garment stuff done in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. And we've got some stuff in Texas happening, and we're going to be doing a quite a few other products as well. We're trying to get into a bunch of different categories.
Who are you driving with? I feel bad because he told you got to be quiet for 40 minutes while I ask stupid questions.
He's fine.
That's the coolest job in the world. You take Mr. Eastwood over to ride the endless wave. Does he ride too? He looks like a guy. Look, he's been on a surfboard.
Yeah, he's been on.
He was a boogie boarder. Scott was a boogie boarder. Don't let him fool you.
Oh yeah, I had him. I was thinking maybe Ziffy board, but he was a boogie boarder. The Ziffy board predated the boogie board. It was like the lamer.
Ziffy, I don't even know what that is.
Chris will find a picture of a Ziffy board. It was like a hard plastic boogie board, and then the boogie board revolutionized the belly boarding world. But all right, I want you guys to now. How do you do at the endless wave? Are you going to be trying tricks and stuff? Or are you just trying to stay on?
Well, I mean, our version of tricks and a professional surfer's version of tricks are two different things. Yeah, we're pretty average surfers, you know, intermediate, I'd say. But, you know, we get it done. I don't know about, you know, what's kind of interesting about these waves, though, is that it really has advanced surfing in a very short amount of time. It's imagine if, you know, when you're surfing, you typically have to chase conditions around the world, right? You're very ocean dependent. And so you have to chase these swells. You're chasing weather windows.
Right.
But now when you have something that is consistent every time, you know, for the first time ever, we're going to have surfing in our Olympics.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Yeah. We're surfing in the Japan Olympics.
Yeah. We're looking at a picture of you looking pretty good. Where is that?
I don't even know the screen.
It says BSR Cable Park and American Wave Machines.
Oh, that's there. That's not even the ocean. You know, it's kind of interesting. So it's like the wave machine, you can take it down, Chris, but the wave machine kind of reminds me of the ball pit. Like when they figured out the foam pit for all, you know, all the motorcycle stunt stuff and all the skiing stunt stuff. Like, how are you going to practice a double backflip on a Honda 250 in the desert or on dirt? You're going to kill yourself. But they started doing the foam pit, and all the crazy aerial skiers and everything, once the foam pit was invented, were able to up their game to the point where everyone could do a double backflip in a matter of, you know, months versus nobody but Travis Pastrana could do it. And I think that the endless wave or the synthesized wave is kind of the foam pit for the surfers. You can practice all the time. There's always a swell. It's safe, and you can work on those moves.
Yeah, 100%. Guys, actually, speaking of guys doing backflips, there was guys doing backflips last time I was there, which was a week or two ago, and I've never seen that in surfing before, so I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
I'm excited to watch surfing in the Olympics.
Yeah.
Oh, we have a picture of a Ziffy board. Sorry. Yeah, it's a plastic. It's a plastic piece of shit from my childhood. If anyone ever asked me, tell me about your childhood, I'd go, it's a plastic piece of shit. It's something that didn't really work, and you were happy to have it.
Something that your alcoholic father got you.
Yeah, I wish my dad was an alcoholic. It would have given him a hobby. The Outpost is the name of the movie. It's in theaters and on demand coming up July 3rd. And I watched it last night. It's moving. It's a great movie. And if you like war movies, for sure, The Outpost is, you should definitely seek that out. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. When are we going to bring back the man show?
Let me get Kimmel's publicist on the blower and see how open they are to that suggestion.
The time is right.
Thank you.
How well does the man show go over now?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I couldn't even imagine. It would be a wild success, and they would burn down the studio that we filmed it in. I think simultaneously.
It'd be trending.
It would trend. Thank you, Scott. We'll talk to you hopefully soon, and good luck on that full-size Ziffy board. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with the news right after this.